Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What's up, guys? It's your boy, Dylan. I'm here to talk about, once again, betonline.ag. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season, everything from NFL and bowl season to esports. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. They're the fastest and easiest way for all your betting needs for all your favorite leagues and events. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Just make sure you use our promo code BELIEVE, that is capital letters B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. One more time, that is capital letters B-L-E-A-V, BetOnline, where the game starts. And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Top of Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Hunzinger at Thunder Chats. We are part of the Believe Network, and this podcast is brought to you by betonline.ag. Now that all the formalities are out of the way, I got to introduce my co-host first. We got feverishly typing at his work. We're looking at the ceiling right now. We've got Alex Troy. What's up, Alex?
What is up, man? I'm doing two things at once, man. Multitasking. So let's go.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Also, we've got in the state of Texas, we got he's fighting a little bit of a head cold and a bunch of other stuff too, but he's powering through for us. We got Maddie Moles. What's up, Moles?
Hey, not a whole lot. Really excited about the festivities that are going to occur this weekend. Really excited to watch the game in OKC, make the pilgrimage back home, and hang out with the boys. So, Two more sleeps, and then I get to see all you guys in person, so I'm really excited.
There you go, man. Well, hey, without further ado, let's stop burying the lead. So joining us today, this is a man that hails from the Big Apple of New York City. He graduated from St. Joseph's University with a degree in English. When he's not making hilarious and true Thunder memes for his Twitter, you can read his work on NBA Math or Bleacher Report, as well as listen to him break down the game of basketball in a fun and entertaining way on a Hardwood Knox podcast. I couldn't say that for some reason. So shout out to Frank Nilakino. Apologies to Jared Allen. Say what's crack-a-lackin' and welcome to the podcast, the certified fantabulous thermonuclear AF Dan Favalli.
Oof, that was one heck of an intro. Thank you. Thank you so much. You clearly did your research there. That's probably the best podcast intro I have had in at least years, if not of all time. So thank you.
That's what that man is known for.
Yeah, we try to set the tone very early on, you know, hype up the guests, you know, make them feel welcome and excited for, you know, what's about to come on. So, I mean, Dan, you know, as you can tell, I've been listening to your podcast a lot. I'm a big fan of your work. So very excited to have you on here. I mean, as I mentioned, like, you're very complimentary of the Thunder, Shay, some of the guys. We're going to talk all about that. So, yeah, very excited to have you on, man.
I appreciate that. This is all great for my ego. So.
I remember. Well, hey, so I mean, feed your ego a little bit more. Let's talk about you before we get into the Thunder. You know, this is a Thunder podcast, but let's talk about Dan. So, you know, this is a question that we kind of ask all our first time guests. You know, just what first made you a basketball fan?
I was just I was super young, and I was kind of born and raised a Knicks fan. And my earliest basketball memories are sitting in front of the television, watching Patrick Ewing just sweat a crap ton, and falling in love with his work ethic, and then also just being simultaneously frustrated when you're at that age where you're not really analyzing the game, but you know enough to understand that Michael Jordan just never misses. Like, it's just that type of a thing. And so watching him just sort of roll through the Knicks on so many occasions, it was sort of like a love-hate relationship, because it became torturous to watch like those Knicks teams be so good but never really get over the hump. But I think the time when I was so young, being so involved with the Knicks and seeing like so many awesome playoff series between them and the Pacers and the Heat specifically, it didn't really taint how I felt about the game of basketball. Like, if I was a younger fan that came around and saw the Knicks in like the early 2000s or something, like, I'd be completely disenchanted from the sport of basketball. And so I think timing had a lot to do with it.
For sure, man. So, I mean, obviously, you said you grew up watching the Knicks. You got a bunch of Knicks stuff in the background. You're living in New York now. Like, are you born and raised in New York? You from there originally?
Yeah, I was born and raised in New York. Long Island, the suburbs. I've never lived in the city. That's never been like I don't really actually like New York City. That's a dirty little secret. Having traveled there a bunch for work and been in Knicks games, I don't like New York City. But, yes, I've been in New York my entire life.
Gotcha. Yeah, one of our co-hosts, Cone, I guess he's like a co-worker adjacent to you, where he does some streams for Bleacher Report as well. He just moved up there to New York here recently, and he's having a good time there. So, obviously, man, you're in New York. I mentioned that you went to St. Joseph's University. So, I mean, you got a degree in English. Was it always a goal of yours to become a writer, or was there a different path that you could have taken you had in mind?
No, I think once I was old enough to realize I was never going to be good at playing basketball, I always wanted to cover it. It was interesting, though, how my career goals changed, like, sort of midstream, where I actually started out on a sports journalism scholarship at Penn State, and then just going through the motions there, seeing how the industry was changing, going through the Penn State program, which was actually like fairly terrible. and it didn't seem like it was geared enough towards modern day media, excuse me. And then just also being homesick, being away from a year, I decided to come home, got the English degree, because that's clearly the smartest decision in life that you could make, is to get the English degree. But I was happier there, and I started writing online while I was still in school, and that ended up opening more doorways than following the internship at a newspaper path ever would have. And so I think kind of that was kind of at the peak of like the blogs, or like the rise of the opinion writers. And I think that shaped a lot of what I wanted to do. I always thought I needed to be a beat writer or work for a newspaper. And I was never someone who could hold back their opinion all that well. And also, while I have all the respect in the world for beat writers, that completely, I like objective subjectivity rather than just complete objectivity, where it's like, you can't really write with necessarily a tone, and a lot of it needs to be recappy, and you're beholden to access and like what teams are going to let you in, and you have to deal with them if they don't like something you write. And I have no problem answering for something I write, but to know that your access is beholden to the tone that you might carry with a team for certain organizations, not all of them, that really just started to turn me off early on in my freshman year of school. And so I ended up just pivoting and sort of stumbling into like what was more just the online writing, which clearly was obviously the better, safer, stabler insofar as anything could be stable in this industry, way to go.
So you started with Bleacher Report in what, 2011?
Yeah, I started with them when they were just a laughing stock, basically. And I was there when Turner bought them out and was lucky enough to be offered a full-time position. And I just, that's rare in this industry, but I haven't looked back ever since. So I do recognize that I'm very lucky.
Bleacher Report used to be like an aggregate back in the day, right?
Yes, but it was more like, even more than that, it was like stuff that I was publishing wasn't, going through editors. It wasn't being checked. It wasn't collaborative. I just came up with it. And it was a lot more volume too, where when I first started out at Bleacher Report, I might do like, and that points to the aggregation stuff that you do. And we still have people that do that because aggregation is still such a huge part of the industry. But I'd be doing like 8 to 10 pieces a day. And now it's like, I'll stop and look back and, fast forward 10, 11 years later. And it's like, I might publish, they're massive like think pieces now, but they're like one or two a week sometimes. And so it's definitely a lot different. And I obviously prefer having the time to go a little bit more in detail and There's more time to actually watch and study the game of basketball when like you're conducting it that way. So, but it's definitely a night and day experience from how I came up for sure.
So talking about that, you were focused more on the Knicks probably early on, but now you're on the national level, right? The national scene, and you look at the entirety of the association. How was that transition from maybe following one team to having to be pretty knowledgeable about the entire NBA and write about it?
That is one of the most intimidating things I've ever done in my entire life. Is it was when I first started writing for Bleacher Report, like it was mostly Knicks stuff. And then as they started to get more of a reputation, they asked me if I wanted to try covering the entire NBA. And so like, I'm still, I don't know, 20, maybe 21 at the time, whatever it was. And that's kind of when it happened. And it was, you know, they gave me the leeway and the agency to learn. And I probably wrote a bunch of stuff that if I looked back, I just would not be proud of right now. But you learn to sort of juggle the time commitment that's involved. And you have to learn to understand, I think, especially as, and this would be a podcast that's a testament to it, and I say this all the time on Hardwood Knox, the localization of coverage is definitely on the rise over the last half decade or so. And so many of these regional team-specific or market-specific podcasts are so good that it forces you to kind of stay up more on your stuff as a national like writer and podcaster. But you also have to recognize that people are coming to you for different things. They're not, you know, if you're a Thunder fan, you shouldn't come to Hardwood Knox because you want to know what the Thunder's rotation on the second night of a back-to-back on a Tuesday in January in the third quarter down by 10 looks like. Like, that's what you guys are for, insofar as Mark Daigneault can ever run a predictable rotation, because that guy feels like he doesn't have all over the place. That has been even a learning curve now later on. But I think the biggest adjustment was it sort of neuters. I call myself a deadly disenchanted Knicks fan, but it sort of kills like your specific fandom. And so there's a part of me that misses living and dying with the Knicks a little bit, but that was really the biggest adjustment, was like, you know what? I'm not going to watch every Knicks game now, like, mm-hmm. because that's just not my job. And I spend so much time attempting to cover the entire NBA. And so it just becomes, I think the biggest adjustments to boil this down was figuring out the time commitment and how to balance it, and then figure out a way to be thorough and at least insufferable as you can possibly be. Because I do think there's a lot of disdain for how a lot of the national podcasts and media members cover the league. And there are people that hate me now and will downvote the podcast or come in my mentions. And so dealing with that was an adjustment too on the national like scale. Not to say that I'm popular, but you're just open to more criticism because there's more fan bases that will inherently have an opinion on what you wrote. And so all that has been an adjustment, and some of it, especially the time stuff and figuring out how to cover the entire league when so much is changing, when you look at load management, player availability, and all these injuries, it's a constant process, but it is a challenge that I do still enjoy.
As a Thunder fan who roots for a team that owns the Clippers' future, I really do love load management right now. So it's my favorite.
As you should. I mean, you know, we could talk about their 2024 pick, but I even just like scale ahead to that 2026 pick. It's like, where might that thing be when you mm-hmm. look at how old Kawhi and PG will be at that stage, if they're even still on the Clippers at that point.
And let's not forget about the 2025 pick swap.
Oh yeah, I'm just big on looking like 2 or 3 years ahead on like some of those teams where it's just like, you know, I understand why people won't trade for the Lakers 2027 pick as an example, because if you're a front office guy, unless you're Sam Presti or Masai Ujiri, you don't have the job security to say, you know what, I'm going to be the one that does something with that pick. You also got to look at the teams and see like kind of how barren they are of future assets and know that, well, they're going to come apart at the seams at some point. And with the Clippers specifically, we might be witnessing that in real time, because they look beyond the load management, and they've had good minutes with Kawhi and PG on the floor. They just have so many concerns up and down that roster right now. The offense has been, even by the load management standards, even after they've been a little bit better this month, it's been pretty bad. And so like, that's just definitely something to watch.
Oh yeah. And you know, you was talking about how, you know, not everybody likes your coverage of like, you know, specific teams and stuff like that. Like I would be lying if I said that I haven't got a good hunk of engagement just off of screenshotting, like, you know, the Thunder section of, you know, said Bleacher Report article and just putting it out there and be like, what do you guys think about this? And then just get like, you know, everybody arguing in the comments. So, you know, it's all par for the course. You know, everybody wants to be mad at something. Everybody wants to, you know, like, I don't want to say fetishize it, but like, you know, whenever somebody listens to a podcast or sees an article and they see, and like somebody says that the Thunder are going to do something crazy, like, you know, they get excited about it. Like whenever, you know, we're listening to the Low Post or something like that, and you know, they have a whole segment about the Thunder, everybody gets super excited about it. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. You know, kind of talking about that, and you know, it kind of transitions into this question, you know, you have the podcast, The Hardwood Knox, and you do cover the league, and you're very connected within, you know, a community, and, you know, you have your Discord, and, you know, that's kind of like your main community, but like you branch out to like every team, you talk about every team. What kind of inspired you to start the Hardwood Knox podcast? And was Grant a part of it from the jump?
He was not. We've actually worked together for basically my entire time at Bleacher Report. So he was always a guest, but I started it with a former coworker and good friend, Adam Frommel. And it was just, we were very early on in our careers and we were looking for a way to, we saw that podcast were on the rise at the time. I think it was like 2014 or whatever it was. Man. We were looking for a different medium and a way to also kind of force yourself to stay even more up to date on the rest of the league. If you feel beholden to where you're the one that's crafting the content and interacting with listeners. And so that was just kind of how it was inspired. And it's undergone some lineup changes over the years. But you know, it's grown into what it is today, which is a medium-sized NBA podcast. There are a lot of bigger ones out there. I say this all the time, but I do think it's underrated, but it's also what makes it underrated is I think we don't take ourselves too seriously. And like, we really are about trying to cater to what the audiences want to hear. It's not meant to be, I guess, listen baity or whatever it is. Like, I'm sure people might hate listen to it or something, but our audience, you know, mailbags are some of our favorite episodes. Like, we want the listeners to drive the discussion. And a lot of the times it feels like, yeah, topical stuff is good. Or if you want to get the, you know, the acclaim from like your peers who are in the industry, you want them to listen to your podcast. Like, that's always nice to hear when someone that I admire listens to the podcast. It's just like, oh, you did, but it doesn't happen that often, but it has happened. But it actually means more to me to be invited on a podcast that covers a specific team like this, or to hear from listeners that keep coming back that have questions because they're a fan of a specific team. And they're still going to come and listen to this podcast that maybe is going to be wrong or say have dissenting opinions from what they feel about their team, or just come back and want to hear about the rest of the league. And so it was our desire, I think, at the beginning to dig deeper. Like, we were kind of early on in covering the entire league, and we just wanted to make sure we were doing that at a higher level. And then since then, we've definitely reached a plateau, I think, in terms of growth. So it's more about, to me, just the relationship I have with the listeners and the community. And there's definitely an ego thing to it, too. Like, if you don't have a podcast and you're a full-time NBA writer at this point, like, there has to be like these, you know, this inundated feeling of irrelevance at that point. And so I feel like if I just stopped podcasting, I would feel completely irrelevant.
That's fair. That's 100% fair. I understand what you mean there. And, you know, kind of touching on, you know, I guess like your coverage of the NBA teams, something I do appreciate that, you know, like, take the Low Post, like I mentioned before. I remember, I think it was Gavoni that was on his podcast. They were talking about the Thunder Young Core. And Zach Lowe was talking about how, like, Jalen Williams, J-Dub, you know, isn't, like, you know, long or athletic or anything like that. And Gavoni's like, he's literally 7 foot. He has a 7 foot two wingspan. And it just, like, and Zach Lowe was, like, shocked. And it just, like, kind of told you, like, oh, he hasn't really tuned into the Thunder. Like, I appreciate that you guys, like, your opinion's informed, basically. Like, I can tell that you've actually, like, watched the game. You've actually done your homework and, you know, following along on your Twitter, like, you're live tweeting or you're live tweeting, like, you know, a random Thunder, like, Pistons game. Like, you're doing your homework. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. In lieu of being able to break down X's and O's like a Zach Lowe can or like an Akias Duncan can in real time, like, that's just, yeah, that's what I have to do. So I appreciate that at least comes across that I'm trying to be informed, even if it doesn't always work out that way.
Absolutely.
So speaking about being informed and looking at things at a higher level, NBA math, were you part of the creation of that? And what's your involvement with that?
I get way too much credit for NBA math and I deserve basically none of it. That was the brainchild of my still good friend, Adam Frommel, who I started the Hardwood Knox podcast with. Mm-hmm. I was, when we published more written content, I was the deputy editor in chief, and we used to run a sports writing program for people who were trying to break into the industry where we would give them feedback. Some of them, and that's probably one of the coolest things in my career, is like, some of them have gone on to work for teams. Some of them have just, they're in the business now and they're like fairly popular. And so it's cool to see people that I don't want to say I mentored because I wouldn't give myself that much credit, but to see people you worked with and collaborated with and gave feedback to go on to succeed. And so that was like, you know, the podcast is still published there on the website, but that was like the heaviest I was involved when we did that for, I think it was only 2 years because it became such a time commitment thing on our end when we had all this other stuff happening. But no, the stats, the models, the graphics, those are all the brainchild of Adam. And he somehow is able to keep up with all that despite his own responsibilities.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I told you that I fully understand what TPA means, but all I know is whenever he puts the graph out and Shay's up there, you know, around like Luka, Jason Tatum and all that, I'm like, all right, you know, we're doing good.
That's like, look, as fans and even like media members aren't going into the nitty gritty to see like, oh, well, why is Raptor like this? Or what is like the LeBron metric? Like, there's not people who are reading through all that. It's the visuals that really speak to people. And I think he was, to his credit, was one of the earlier ones where I think a lot of people have taken on the trend of where you see like the way it's plotted, where they're using the faces and it's like they're putting it against, you know, volume and efficiency is like the big one. And I think he was Kurt Goldsberry did a lot of that too, but I do think Adam at NBA Math was like one of the first ones to start that. Now it's just all over Twitter. And so like, and look, visuals are helpful, and it's a, you know, there's no perfect catch-all metric, but I know that he's run the formula by like people who, I don't want to say matter, that's a terrible way to put it, but like people who would know that stuff, and they've like said like, yeah, like this works. And again, not everything, not all kitchen sink metrics, none of them are meant to be absolute, but I think he just stumbled onto something, certainly with the visuals. And I do think, you know, I get the desire to want to distill things down to one stat sometimes too, because there's so much that you want to discuss or think about or write. Like if you're just looking for something to prove the macro view of a player, and especially if it's matching with what you've seen, or even in the case of like, you know, I have jokes in the podcast where it's like, I have my own agendas. Like I will find you a stat that shows you Frank Ntilikina is impactful. If you can do that and TPA like sort of helps you, I think the visuals end up being like a major lift there.
I love it, man. Well, hey, as I mentioned, you know, TPA is very friendly to Shay. And, you know, if you're talking about OKC with an NBA fan, you can't go very long without mentioning Shay. Were you surprised by the leap he's taken this year? And do you think he might have another leap in him?
I don't want to say I was shocked. It's definitely, I mean, like he's been a top 10, top A player in the league. And so like that's surprising when you look at who's just in that company. I guess I'm not surprised because watching him the past 2 years, there was the stop and start nature to his seasons based off when he actually finished them. But like the self-creation element was always there. Not even, so that'd be the 2020-2021 season. Like his efficiency was just through the roof. And so like, this has just been an extension of that kind of on steroids. And I think what probably most surprises me is that when you look at the way the Thunder run their offense, you know, Josh Giddey's gotten a lot better at playing off of Shea, and Lu Dort like is just more comfortable firing away and knows how to use open space. Like the Thunder offense is not like aesthetically pleasing still when you look at their spacing, and this dude is just able to get through crevices, have all these tough finishes, these change of pace drives. It's really mesmerizing. And I think if I'm actually surprised by anything, how he's leveled up as just a playmaker overall and reacts to just the chaos that he creates is huge. And then the other thing is, and I tweeted about this a couple weeks ago, I think the Thunder do go, I won't call it to great lengths, but they do insulate him a lot defensively. And yet I haven't seen him play so well on defense since he was a rookie on the Clippers. And I thought he was going to be like one of the best defenders in the NBA. And so like to carry that two-way burden, or to say, to be that good on both ends of the floor in the same season, and to have the Thunder like in the play-in mix, again, it's surprising. It's not shocking because I think he's shown this caliber of play, but to do it now for so long, that it is kind of astounding to say, well, did we think that Shea was going to be a top 10, top 8 player this year? No, I would not have predicted it.
So going along with that, that was before what you could have predicted. NBA Math on Twitter talked about the West All-Stars per PRR MVP. So the All-Star starters are announced on Thursday. A lot of national media heads stumping for Shea. They were talking about him potentially making it last year, and injuries, you know, and whatnot could have derailed that. Where do you stand on Shea, the starter in the All-Star game? And what do you think will happen?
I stand that Luka Doncic should be eligible at forward because that's what he defends. And then yes, it becomes very easy to put Shea Gilgeous-Alexander as a starter in the All-Star game, whether he's with Steph Curry or John Morant. That would be my official stance. What I struggle with when it comes to All-Star is how much do I wait minutes played? and it becomes like sort of that push and pull in the MVP discussion, where I think actually availability, just because we've gone through a full season at that point, is probably a little bit more important. The three options, though, to me, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to Ja, is Steph, Luka, and Shea. Like, those would be the right calls. I would probably lean, just because of how much time that Steph Curry ended up missing, I would probably lean Shea and Luka at this point, who, like, Luka's availability has been a bear this year, and I don't know where the Mavericks would be without that. What do I think is going to happen? I think it's going to be a Doncic, Steph Curry backcourt. And I don't want to say that's the wrong answer. What I think is probably comforting, at least I would think to Thunder fans, is like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be an all-star, whether he's a starter. Like, he's just going to be an all-star. And that's like a pretty awesome thing to be able to say, when I think the low-hanging fruit from the national media and fans who follow the league at large is like, oh, is he even going to be like still active by the time they get to the all-star break?
So follow up on that, because, you know, things are a little finicky and whatnot with like how the voting and all that happens. Forget all-star game. Let's talk all NBA. Where do you have Shai? What is he on an all-NBA team, and where?
Yeah, I think he would probably be on my, and I actually need to go through this exercise for another podcast that I'm doing tomorrow. I think I have him on second team right now, is where I went through my rough draft. And strong. You have to like factor in some of the East guards, and like Donovan Mitchell's sort of right up there. Yeah. But aside from having Mitchell, if Steph ends up playing enough time, just because we still have the rest of the season to go, and Luka, like, there are the three, and I don't really know who you're trying to put like in front of Shai after that. And so, like, there's your four guard spots. So I would think that Shai would be no lower than the second team. There's a chance, especially because of what the injury to Devin Booker now. Like, there's a real chance that Shai ends up being like on the first team too. I don't think he's going to beat out both Luka and Steph. I'd be shocked, but like, I have him as a second team lock right now, but there's a real chance if one of those guys ends up missing time, or Steph ends up missing more time, or if the Warriors decide that, hey, this is another gap year and Steph is going to be done in March or something, like, that's going to be a pretty big boon for SGA's, not just all NBA case, but first team all NBA case.
Oh yeah. It's kind of funny whenever Woj tweeted out that Trae Young, Luka Doncic, and Shai all signed max extensions. You know, he included a bigger number with Luka and Trae because it was including the all NBA incentive. Shai got the incentive, but he didn't tweet it out with it. And it's going to be funny that Shai might get that incentive before Trae, you know, obviously Trey's got all NBA before, but like before Trae does, you know, on his max extension. It's just kind of ironic. Love to see it. All right, man. So, you know, kind of switching gears a little bit, Josh Giddey. So Josh Giddey's turned what looked into a sophomore slump, and he's turned it into a sophomore supremacy with this play since, you know, early December. What improvements do you see most from Giddey from last year? And, where do you think he projects league wide for his ceiling?
Yeah. So, a player that it looks like I was woefully wrong about, last year leading into this season, where I wouldn't say I'll never be out on a second year player, but his game just did not appeal to me. I thought it was a terrible fit alongside Shai. Mm-hmm. I will say probably the thing that's most impressed me is how well he seems to fit next to Shai now. He looks a lot more comfortable working off the ball. He's hit, I think it's almost for the season now, 36% of his zero dribble threes. And he's just been off the charts on efficiency of that lately, like you mentioned, probably since December. And that's, you know, people can make fun of it. They could talk about the hitch that's still in his jumper, how wide open he is. Those are the shots you need to hit. Like, those are the shots he's going to get, even if you're in a playoff setting for now. And yeah, it'd be nice to maybe see him be more efficient and higher volume on pull-ups, but this is year two. And I think the willingness to shoot from distance now, and then also coupled, he seems a lot more unpredictable when he's going downhill, and a lot more willing to toss up the floater or finish around the basket. It adds a variance to his game that I think is important. And it makes you think like, oh, like him and Shai really could work long-term. And as far as where he projects to the rest of the league, I don't know how to do that necessarily. I know you asked about like, where might he go in a redraft? And I think I could say with confidence, the only players that I would take over him right now from that draft class are still Cade, Evan Mobley, Franz Wagner, and probably Scotty Barnes. Mm-hmm. And so like, those are the four players that I would say, like, there might be people that say, oh, like, well, I might take Şengün. It's like, well, I'm not going to take Şengün. I prefer someone who's going to actually operate more from the point of attack. That's pretty big time for him. And the other way I would frame this is he's just tracking toward, and this is skipping too far ahead, but when you start to think he's going to wrap up year two, then comes year three and he's extension eligible. If this is just the track, if this is the player that he is right now, that's probably going to cost you near or absolute max money to extend him. And so like, that's a pretty big, yeah, those extensions get handed out a little bit more frequently because of how friendly rookie extensions tend to be. But like, that is the course that he is on now. I'm not saying he's going to be this perennial all-star, but like, for me to say that, even as someone who was just like meh on him leading into this year, like, he's shown a ton of improvement, and you want to see it continue this season and into next year when the Thunder are going to look different with Chet Holmgren there. But like, this is someone who I think could maybe have an all-star ceiling, but like I said, I think he's going to have that. The best way to frame it for me right now is he looks like someone who's going to be one of those formality near max extension candidates.
Gotcha, man. Yeah, I mean, as far as like being wrong on Josh Giddey, I mean, what no further to us. You know, we had a what was it? We did a live spaces during the draft, like reacting to all of our picks and stuff. We were fiending for James Bouknight, and then Josh Giddey was the pick. And so
it was not pretty. It was not pretty. It was not pretty to the eye. It was not pretty to the ears. It was not pretty at all.
Yeah, so I mean, we couldn't have been more wrong. We was wrong about Giddey and wrong about Bouknight in the same pick. So you know, you're not alone there.
Yeah, I remember Bouknight's first summer league thinking like, oh, like this kid's gonna be something. And then it was just like, oh man, that's just Charlotte's just so sad. We need to move on immediately. I'm depressed.
Yeah, no, it really is sad. It just keeps getting worse too. All right, man. So let's talk about this year's draft class. Obviously, we drafted Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams out of Santa Clara, Jalen Williams out of Arkansas, and Usman Jang from the NBL. What was your thoughts on this year's draft class for us?
I thought Chet was just a great pick. I mean, I know he's out for the year. That's like, especially when you see how good this team is, that just really sucks, such man. Like, he's just such a perfect hit for what they need, but it does make you more excited to see what they're, you know, they're probably going to get to exercise that Clipper swap this year. Like, so then they're going to add another lottery pick to it. But I'm excited to see him play. And I thought that was the no-brainer pick for them with Paolo already off the board. I know some people kind of thought that Jabari might have been the better fit for them. I think it was Andrew Schlett had said on one of his podcasts that the Thunder are just going to not draft a player like that because he can't make there's not enough layers to his offensive game. And so that makes a lot of sense. The player I was most excited about, and I was irate, and they never would have made this pick because the Knicks don't make this pick. I was in love with Usman Jang. And, like, I don't know if we need to get him, like, some Teflon wrists just to make sure this doesn't continue to happen. He looks like someone who's going to be really good, has a nice feel for the game. I think he's going to be an exceptional defender. There's going to be a lot riding on his jump shot, of course. But this just, when you watch him on offense, on or off the ball, there's a feel there. And I think he's going to end up being, like, really impactful defensively. And I knew nothing about either Jalen Williams, to be fair, because I crashed course before the draft, like a few weeks beforehand. But Jalen Williams is super exciting. You talk about someone who also seems like he has a really good feel for the game as a rookie. Like, those are two players in Williams and Jang that I think, yeah, okay, they're going to be mentioned after Chet Holmgren. Like, those are two guys, when you look at them, I could see them being very important parts of an NBA rotation for the next decade plus. And so did the Thunder just draft three of those types of guys in the same draft? And the answer is, we clearly don't know right now, but maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, talking about, you know, the 2 years ago lottery or draft night, whenever we went over spaces, we was drafting over spaces last year too. So whenever that trade came in that we was, you know, trading back into the lottery and not giving up our pick, you know, the next pick after making it three lottery picks, we were going nuts, insane. You know, kind of talking to you, you know, about you, about your Knicks fandom. Obviously, you like Usman Jang, but like, are you okay with the three first round picks, or would you rather had Usman Jang?
I'd rather have Usman Jang. I mean, like, those, they were three or two, I call them fake first round picks.
Yeah, there's
a chance those Detroit and Washington picks just do not. I'd probably bet on the Washington pick actually never conveying. But so, like, we'll see what happens with that Detroit, but they're protected until kingdom come. And we saw it with the Donovan Mitchell trade sweepstakes. We're seeing it even kind of now leading into the trade deadline. Those don't have the cachet that you think they do just because they say first round pick on it. You look at it and go, well, we're probably not going to get that till 2026, if that, or if it's the Wizards case until 2028 or whatever it is, if that, or if it's flip-flopped, whatever. So I would absolutely positively rather have Usman Jang. And they did not, contrary to what people are going to make you believe, like, there are other modes of operations that they could have went about to end up dumping salary and clearing space for Jalen Brunson. Like, that didn't have to be part of their offseason machinations in any form.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, those were like
At least those two, but like those were three of our worst first round picks that we have like in our treasure chest.
The first red flag is Sam Presti consolidating picks. That's if that's your first red flag, if that's what he was doing, he's consolidating first. You should really take a good long look at the value of them.
So I have a partial question to piggyback on that. Who would you rather have, Alperen Şengün or Usman Jang on your team moving forward?
Oh man, I really hope there aren't Rockets fans listening to this podcast. I'd probably just take Usman Jang. I know people think Alperen Şengün.
They don't exist.
Yeah, I know people think Alperen Şengün is like better on defense than expected, but I think that speaks more to the low bar that we have for him on defense than anything else. And I appreciate more of the defensive versatility of an Usman Jang. And then sort of just like when you look at his player archetype, it's just more desirable if he pans out than it would be for Şengün, who has not even, you know, same thing for Jang here, but like Şengün is a fantastic passer. He can put the ball on the floor. But he hasn't shown like much of a perimeter shot at all. And I think you cap your offense when it feels like you have someone like Şengün who needs to be the focal point or the semi-focal point to make his impact. Whereas like Usman Jang is going to just end up filling a bunch of different gaps and is not going to need to be this featured player on the offensive end. And so I think that there is, when you get to that point where we're not talking about like this very good from scratch point of attack creator, I want the guy who's going to be more scalable across different iterations of the team rather than someone who in Şengün, I think you probably need to more specifically tailor the rest of your roster to.
So Şengün was one center that we decided we didn't want and we traded, but you mentioned, yes, we were a very exciting team, but playing without our guy at the five spot who we drafted number two overall in Chet Holmgren, where do you think the Thunder are right now if Chet's in the fold?
That's such a tough question. He's so, in theory, such a great fit to what they need, but then you also have to kind of cake in, well, he is a rookie, and like, were they going to hit on just every single rookie that they had?
Yes, they were.
And also just the role that he would have played on defense would have just been, I think, really central when looking at the position that he plays, and they don't have like these other bigs to necessarily inoculate. I would have loved to have seen like a Poku Holmgren front court.
Yeah.
And someone in our Discord had said like the Thunder need to somehow get Wemby so that they can have those three and call them the Holy Finity. And that was the first time I'd ever seen that. And I couldn't stop laughing.
That Clippers pick needs to happen now. It's got to happen.
I would pay obscene amounts of money to watch those three play together. But all that said, they're probably, if he's just healthy, they're probably better. If you are giving like real minutes to, let's even say, two rookies, because like I would have been interested to see how does Holmgren being healthy impact the opportunity that Poku ended up getting at the middle of the season, but like, does it impact like the Jang or the Williams minutes at all a little bit too? I just think the Thunder, if anything, they'd probably be maybe a little bit worse on defense, but I think a lot better on the offensive end than they've been so far. And so maybe they're kind of in the same territory, if not a little better, but like his theoretical fit on this roster, if he's healthy and he's just ready, it's just, and also working with Chip Englund too, who's as someone who's already an accomplished shooter, I would think that the Thunder would just be much better off. And that's why it's so tantalizing to think about not their future, but like what does this team look like next year, even if they're left basically untouched.
Yeah, we're very excited, man. I mean, obviously, like, we have a pick in next year's draft. You know, we don't know how high it's going to be necessarily, but we do have that Clippers pick swap that, you know, may even make it higher than we thought it would be. And then also we have, you know, no matter what happens, no matter who we bring in, no matter where we finish this year, we're adding Chet Holmgren to the next year. So, like, it's going to be a movie, man. It's going to be very excited. You know, you kind of talked about, you know, how he would fit with the Thunder. What's your valuation for Chet like long term in this league? Do you think that, are you one of those guys that think he's too skinny, like it's not going to work out, or like do you see the all-star potential? Like, I mean, what do you think about Chet?
I would probably lean pretty heavily towards the latter. I'd be just concerned about what does he end up being on defense. Like the switchability is there, and so if you wanted to play him with another big where he's going to defend fours or even wings, I think that's fine. As a primary big would probably be like defender. That would be where I would have questions. I don't have any about like offense. He's either going to be complimentary, or I think that that's someone you could put the ball in his hands, operate from the point of attack, even if you want to, as a point center, point four, whatever you'd want to call him. And that would work. And so I would be, you know, I would be absurdly high on his future in the NBA. And I will never just presume like someone is going to be fragile. And then everything you read, or if you listen to podcasts that had like the medical experts on, like this injury was just not something that had anything to do with, oh, he's just super skinny. Like, no, that's not what it is. And we've seen players. Yeah. When you see lower body injuries to like really rail thin bigs, there is like cause for some concern, but we've seen Kevin Durant, who's as skinny as they come back from an Achilles injury to deal with his lower body injuries, but still be a borderline MVP favorite during his age 34 season. And so I'm not trying to compare the two here. I will never default to, well, what's his durability going to be like? Are you not going to draft Victor Wembanyama number one because he's super skinny too? No, you're going to draft Victor Wembanyama.
Most.
So, sorry. I was just thinking of the whole Ethinity.
That's great. That's great.
So good. So a guy who's got a cult following here in OKC. Some guys in national media love him. Lu Dort. What are your overall thoughts on Lu Dort? And do you see him as a core piece for us moving forward?
I think it was David Brandon on Twitter. This is now years ago, but this is how much it stuck with me. Tweeted, Lu Dort plays like a Mack truck that is made of smaller Mack trucks. And that's just something that has stuck with me. He has improved so much, I think, offensively. When you look at his, even his efficiency, like when you start to break down splits from the season, like the three-point efficiency has improved, but the willingness to shoot from three and then the decision-making that he has when he can put the ball on the floor, like this is not someone that you need to worry about as a, I think in an average offense as being a liability in the playoffs. Like it could come back to bite you a few times more when you're looking at this current Thunder setup, because I think they need him to make probably a little bit more shots or a little bit more decisions with the ball than another team might. But I would absolutely consider him a core piece of the team unless they decide like, hey, we're going to make this blockbuster trade for a star to come in. Because when you look at, I know people had like sticker shock when they saw his contract. That is like at worst, like a quasi bargain when you look at what he's going to be making relative to the new salary cap. So could I see a potential if the Thunder decided to break character in a few years and go after a star? He's a player that team who's selling a star is going to want, because he's super young. I think people forget how young Lu Dort still is too. But otherwise, like if OKC is just going to go through this organic rebuild, like it seems like they're going to do, I don't know why you wouldn't necessarily consider him a core piece at this point, unless you end up stumbling into so many good wing players through the draft over the next couple of years because the Clippers just suck. I guess there's a potential to see him like bump down a peg or three.
I'm enjoying the continuous piling of the Clippers in this podcast, I just got to say. But yeah, no, I mean, Lu Dort, I mean, like you said, like defensively is like where he hangs his hat. And just the combination of Shai and Dort specifically in the clutch, like the shot making that Shai provides on the offensive end. And then like it was on display in the Nuggets game on Sunday, like Shai hit the game winner. And there was still time left on the clock. He's done that a couple of times this season now. And then Lu Dort, you know, went in there and he locked up Jamal Murray for the final shot. Like the combination of the two, like, you know, I mean, they're best friends. Like they, you know, they've known each other like, you know, forever. And like, you know, they ride and die with each other, but like on the court, they complement each other so well. So, yeah, I've loved what I've seen out of Lu Dort this year. And like specifically, you know, kind of like Giddy as well, you know, since the beginning of December, like Lu Dort's looked great recently offensively. Still has some head scratchers on offense, you know, every now and then he's got to get them out of the system, but in terms of shooting the ball and like, you know, being in attack mode, but yeah, he's been awesome. Obviously, man, like, you know, this is it's a really fun team, and I just want to ask you, you know, as we kind of like wrap up this section of the pod, are there any other players on OKC that really stick out to you that, you know, I guess that you love specifically?
I mean, I'm a Poku diehard, and I thought that he became like around February of last year, whatever it was when he rejoined the rotation, like he became actively good. It does kind of hurt the agenda that they've played their best basketball without him this year, I would think. But I do think when you watch him play and what he can do as a help defender and how I think he's kind of found a way to be more complimentary on offense, this is not someone, and I don't think it's been someone like this for a while, but he's clearly not someone who's like this novelty and needs to be evaluated that way. I think he's someone who can make a real impact on an NBA team. Is it going to be this one when you're looking at Chet Holmgren and kind of the rest of the makeup of the roster? I have no idea, but I think he's someone who is going to be actively helpful to whether it's this team or another team, an NBA team, for years.
Looking at that, so you're talking about the makeup with other people. The Thunder were called the black eye of the NBA with their tanking. Presti isn't the guy for the job after the trades happened and everything. You know, ESPN stoking the flames to try to fill their shows. How do you feel about Presti's approach to this rebuild? And with Thunder 2.0, how do you feel about this new age of roster construction that Presti has kind of pushed forward? It's a little different than the first time around.
Right. So in terms of the job he's done, I do wonder if he thought it was going to be like this quick of a turnaround to where they stunk for 2 years and now they're good. But it pokes a hole in the theory of that they were somehow damaging basketball. I mean, the Rockets now suck for 3 years in a row. Yep. And like
they're getting worse.
Wasn't even planned. So like the James Harden pouting kind of set them back. And they're organically bad too. They have a lot of interesting guys. They don't have a coherent product on the basketball court. So I don't have an issue with what he did in the first place. I think I'd written something. I don't know if it was leading into this season, but I'd said, like, if you get to a point where like you're shutting down Shea again, like then we can start asking some questions this year. They don't need to be good, but like, let's see this year through. And they're going to see this year through because they're good. But also Shea has been, you can't even entertain the idea when he's going for an all NBA second team berth of shutting him down. And so that provides clarity to the rebuild as well. And I think the other thing that should assuade people was that Shea came out during his exit interview. It was like, me and basically, this is not verbatim, like, me and Sam talk all the time. I love it here. Like, I love the direction of this team. It's like the trade chatter could have stopped right there. Players never say that.
Yeah. So,
yes. If they ended up moving him, like, okay, fine. Then you can bring back the memes and say, well, what were they? But like, you had Presti saying one thing, you had Shea. You never just hear that level of commitment from a player. And then also, like, oh, he signs the 5-year extension, like that's, I understand players sign that extension.
No player option.
Right. But that's the thing, is when there wasn't a player option, one, WTF to Shea's agent, quite frankly. Like, he was good enough to have a player option. But the fact that wasn't in there is a harbinger of, and like even this season, I think I went back and looked because I forgot he didn't have a player option because he's so good. I just assumed he would have a player option. So the absence of that is like the Thunder aren't looking to move him. Otherwise, you don't push for that. So I didn't have a problem with what they did. I think the discourse was definitely in some circles skewed in the wrong direction for sure. When I look at the way that they've built this roster, where it feels like when you go back to the sort of like the Harden, Durant, Westbrook days, where they were kind of the only players who felt like they could make decisions with the ball at times. And now you have a bunch of different guys who aren't going to be the level of from scratch creators that those dudes were. That's been like interesting to kind of ponder. And it feels like they have so many guys who can do so many different things that if you sort of hit on, you know, we know they have Chet and Giddy and Shea. And then like, you're looking at, okay, well, what's J-Dub going to become, or what's Jang become? What's this pick become? What does Trey Mann look like? Well, they just have so many different guys long-term that can hit on skill sets that are not singular. It's going to be, when they are a finished product, I'm kind of anxious to kind of see what it looks like. And I don't even think that I fully understand like the form they're looking to take if we fast forward to the version of the Thunder that are contenders. But I will say like it's been for them to prioritize versatility and players where they feel like they can, yeah, they might have flaws, a fundamental flaw in their skill set, but they really feel like they could build it up. It's definitely been intriguing. And I think for them, you know, Giddy might even be like one of the best case studies of it right now. And of course, Dort is one as well with how he's improved on offense, but there's still, for me, as someone who's like, you know, taking the 10,000, 30 foot view, there's still like a curiosity to what they look like in their finished form.
Do you think there's a measure of trepidation from Sam Presti in that the last iteration, you know, the Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Thunder, they kind of got too good too fast. I think that team, you know, may have benefited from like a year or two still of like progress instead of just complete superstardom, because then you had to start paying them like superstars. And it seems like this team is kind of in that same track where you have Shea, he's already got his max. You have someone like Giddy, like you said, he keeps on playing the way he's playing, he's going to get a max deal regardless. You know, you have somebody like Chet coming up. And so, you know, do you think the speed at which this team is kind of getting good maybe, you know, maybe scares Presti a little bit?
I'd actually never contemplated that. I think maybe something that probably has to help a little bit is that now you have someone like Dort on a bargain of a deal. And mm-hmm. so he's paid and you don't have to worry about him. And even Shay's max is going to age incredibly well against the rising salary cap. And then knowing that, you know, we don't know what Jang or even J-Dub might be at the peak. Giddy looking as like their next, oh, that could be an expensive investment. I think that inoculates them a little bit against feeling that they've made too much progress too soon. And there's also just going to be other mechanisms for them to improve that they didn't have in those years because they control so much of the Rockets and Clippers draft moving forward. And so that will help them make other decisions, whether it's trades, like, because if they're too good too soon, like you have to look at consolidating some of these future assets to make the most of that window while you can afford it. So yeah, I haven't given enough thought though to whether they are getting too good too quickly. I don't think it should give him like any sort of trepidation. Just looking at the, again, the next payday, the next windfall would go to Giddy. There's no one else on the roster that you're like, oh, this guy's going to cost like so much money. But there is like the real urgency, just having all of these players, even looking ahead to this summer where you project to have one open roster spot, assuming Muscala stays on, and that's going to go to the first round pick, whether it's yours or the Clippers. And then you have all these other first round picks coming down the pipeline. You do have to start making decisions on players overall. And it's like, okay, we kind of know like Darius Bazley is just not going to be here next year, but like those decisions might get tougher as you start to have more of these first round pick commitments trickle in during the same years. And so that has to be something I think that they're at least thinking about. And I wonder if part of it, even though they were basically fake first, they gave to the Knicks, that had to go into the consideration a little bit where it's like, yeah, we are consolidating like what could be, let's say, two players into one rather than three for one. And so that's, I think, something that they're going to have to start thinking about. Maybe not this summer, but like after that, they're probably going to have to weigh it pretty heavily, I would think.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, you know, even talking about like, you know, with the salaries and, you know, the, you know, it kind of coming too fast or whatever. Obviously, you know, Presti and Quay Bennett and the ownership group have shown the willingness to pay the tax for a winning product. They weren't going to pay the tax while we were going through a rebuild. Like, you know, they traded off Chris Paul, they traded off Steve Nabbs, Gallo, like get all those max contracts out there. Let's get under the tax. And we have been for the past couple of years. And, you know, we still are. But, you know, back when, you know, Russ was running his own team, back when we had Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, Jeremy Grant, then after and all that, like, you know, that was a tax team. I think a lot of the issue was, you know, whenever KD, Harden, Russ, Ibaka all came up to be paid, we could have paid the tax. We could have kept that team theoretically, but that was still a very new franchise, you know, at that stage of, you know, their contention or whatever. So, like, they weren't necessarily prepared to pay the luxury tax, you know. A few years down the line, like I said, whenever Russell Westbrook was running the show, he had Paul George and co. They were willing to pay the tax. And, you know, now we've gone through the rebuild. We've been out of the tax the past couple of years. You know, when you're going through a rebuild, it's a great time to save money. It's a great time to, you know, like build back up your funds. And so I think that when it's time, like, you know, when obviously Shea's on his max, you get Giddy, you get Chet, you know, maybe you even bring in somebody that you get their bird rights. Like, yeah, it's going to be a big bill, but I think that this ownership group and this organization and, you know, the management has proven that, you know, they're willing to pay for a winning product. You know, they just have to be a winning product.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think if you took the James Harden situation circa 2012 and you only had that information in 2012, you didn't know James Harden was going to go on to be James Harden, that franchise now makes a different decision than they did back then. Having the same information again, I think, like you said, being more established. And just, you know, you mentioned Paul George, and this is the, as someone who's advocated for, like, if I was OKC, I understand why you don't do it this season, because their salary matching tools are just quite frankly terrible because everyone's so cheap. So you get past Shea and Lou Dort, like, no, you're not trading Josh Giddey. So, but like, I've been an advocate for them to buy, or at least be a little bit more aggressive, because they have shown when you had Russell Westbrook, like, you went after Paul George, who was not only not guaranteed to re-sign, but just like you went after Paul George. And so when you have who you deem that guy, they've shown that they will be aggressive. Shea is very clearly that guy. And so I know that's, I made a joke about this on Twitter, is sometimes I stumble on to teams and I'm a little bit earlier on them than the consensus, like the Suns. but then gradually like the honeymoon phase kind of dissipates and I have a dissenting opinion. That seems to be where it was with Thunder fans. We're on YouTube where I've gotten comments on Twitter like, no, they're not going to make a trade. They're going to slow play this and they have all those picks. Shea is that guy. And when you have that guy, you maximize the window with that guy, not because you're afraid that he's going to leave, because he's that guy. And Shea is that guy. And I think what we've seen with how the Thunder have acted in the past when they have that guy, would I be surprised if they did something major? Absolutely. But I don't think you can rule out them thinking along those lines because they have in the past, especially when Shea is giving you this information, not, oh, I could be X. No, he's a top 10 player right now. Like, he's been a top 10 player this season. He's going to make all NBA barring like an injury or anything along those lines. So that's what also makes their future fascinating, is they are so flexible because they have all these assets. And I think the general consensus is that they're just going to bring a lot of them in, develop them, and like try to keep them and groom them. It's not going to work like that forever, especially when you have a player who is this good. And so I do think that this franchise is more equipped to sort of like juggle the two different directions that invariably they might have to. Mm-hmm. I just think people around the league and maybe even some Thunder fans are discounting like why there might be, I don't want to call it urgency, but why this team might be willing sooner than most expect to make, so depending on who's available or what they think that they need. And I think the bigger setback is if you had Chet on the court, like now you know what you need on top of your entire core. And right now it's very much, well, Chet can come in and plug that, and who's best suited to play alongside Chet. You're not going to have that information until next season, which is definitely like, that holds you back in terms of making some decisions leading into the summer.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of talking about that, you know, you have been an advocate for the Thunder being buyers. I think in one of your most recent articles, like you had 7 points and the first one was the Thunder should be buyers. And, you know, you've talked about it in your podcast. What does that look like to you? Like who's some legit targets that you could see the Thunder targeting that you would like to see on this team, you know, to help them with their play in or playoff push?
So,
and why is it OG Anunoby?
It's funny because I don't think it's OG Anunoby, who I feel like might be one of the most overrated players in the league right now, because I just don't see it from him on offense. Like, you want someone who can hit you like some standstill threes and then turn the ball over when he puts it on the floor. Awesome. Like, you know, I'm not saying I'd prefer to have J-Dub. I'm just saying if it's good, I don't think what the Thunder need most that he's going to provide them. Maybe be different if Chet was there. I've been trying to figure out a way to get Miles Turner on this team for like a year. They just don't have the salary matching tools right now without giving up players that I think they would deem too steep. That's a name if I were them, because I have cap space, I would circle in free agency. I love his fit with Chet. When you look on sort of a medium scale or a smaller scale, I still would like to see this team like add a functional shooter. I think they're like second in 3-point percentage since the start of January. They need still like more functional shooting and volume. And I like Isaiah Joe has been lights out, and then the Giddy and the Dort improvement. But like, so names that I have circled have been like Garrison Matthews in Houston, just someone who can come in and chuck, or PJ Washington in Charlotte, because we have no idea what the hell the Hornets are doing and he's going to be up for a payday. So names like that. The other one I considered, just because I don't think the Nets particularly want to play so small, and you have Royce O'Neal, you have KD when he's healthy with Kyrie, you're not really sending Joe Harris anywhere. TJ Warren's playing a bunch of minutes. Ben Simmons is there. I've wondered what it would take to get Seth Curry out of Brooklyn at this point, and he feels like a Seth Curry. If anyone heard me say Steph Curry, it was Seth Curry. I've wondered about him, and those are the types of players where it's okay, the Thunder could easily match their salary, and they might be able to include sweeteners that they're just fine giving up. But I think like a PJ Washington or Garrison Matthews are probably like more realistic. Mm-hmm. And maybe I've just lowered my expectations because I expect the Thunder to do literally absolutely nothing. But I'm looking like, yeah, Darius Bazley's gone anyway. Like, what can you attach to his salary to bring someone in here? And that's how I land on like a PJ Washington type.
Yeah, I definitely think that if we make a move, it's going to, well, at least one of them will involve Darius Bazley. I would be very shocked to see him on this team post trade deadline. But yeah, definitely never thought about Seth Curry. Like, the thought of Shea like on the court with Seth Curry on one side and Isaiah Joe on the other side, like, that spacing we haven't had like since Shea's been on the team. Like, that
he'll probably shoot like 90% at the rim if those are lineups. And then Chet's on the court next year. Like, that's how Shea shoots like 80-90% at the rim. Yeah.
I love it. And then PJ Washington, like, we've, a lot of us have been a huge advocate for PJ Washington on this team. You know, I spoiler, I'm a huge Kentucky fan. So like I like harken back to the days of like Shea and PJ playing in college. You know, we had Hami on the team, so I'm trying to get Shea, one of his college teammates, to kind of like revitalize his career once again. So I was also very high on PJ, you know, coming into the draft too. So yeah, like I'm all for getting PJ Washington. What do you think? What do you think the Hornets would want for PJ Washington?
I honestly don't know. I think they're probably going to try and hold out for like first round equity. I think it's tough to get that. His season has been so up and down, and he is headed towards restricted free agency. And so it's like, you know, if you wanted to, could you give up? Can you protect one of the other team's picks that are unprotected for the lottery and then have it expire? And so like you're giving a conditional first plus Darius Bazley for PJ Washington. That would be a package I'd consider if I'm the Thunder and I want to make the most of this season. And also that's someone you could keep. I don't know what his market's going to be in restricted free agency. It's not, I don't think he's going to get nearly as much as Grant Williams, who would be that should be another good fit for this roster.
Yeah.
But the Celtics aren't going to trade him. So that would probably be like, I think that's what the Hornets could get realistically. And I think it's a price the Thunder could justify paying. I just don't know if the Hornets would accept it, but yeah. I think that's like the, you're not going to get more than I think a salary and then like a protected first round pick for PJ right now.
So that was the talk about what you would do now, but pretend you're Sam Presti in the off season. What would you do to turn this roster into a legit contender? And why does it involve Kevin Durant?
Oh man, that's like, that would be hysterical if he requests a trade again. And it's like, hey, why don't you come play with like an actual top 10 NBA player, not the fake top 10 NBA player you think you have in Kyrie, whoever he is. So turn them into a contender by next season, like 23, 24.
Say we become like the 5 seed, because we're only like a game and a half or 2 games out of that right now. And we're like, yeah, we're knocking on the door and we're like, you know what? We could bring in another star because the Kimball Walker money goes off the books and all that stuff. Yeah, so what would you do to turn this into a legit contender for next season?
Swap the pick with the Clippers and draft Wemby would probably be like the way to go in that one.
Done.
I think you just, if you wanted to go that route, you have your cap space. And so I'd go out and I would sign Miles Turner. Like that would be the guy I'd sign and play him with Chet. And then you turn around and then it's like, you'll probably still have, based off the cap space they're supposed to have, what Miles Turner should cost. I would think they would have like a little bit of wiggle room left over maybe. Yeah, I have them at 33 million in cap space in my sheet. So Miles Turner is not going to cost you that. So you'd have some wiggle room to then turn around and say like, let's go trade for like what star is going to come on the market. I think it needs to be the right one. I don't want a Bradley Beal or a Zach LaVine on this team.
We don't either.
I know a lot of people were against the idea of Trae Young because he's such a stark departure from how they play. I get that, especially given how good Shea is on the ball. Does Devin Booker get agitated in Phoenix? He'd probably be the single ideal star to play alongside Shea. That's, I would predict it's not going to happen, by the way. Yeah. Devin Booker seems fantastically happy in Phoenix. But what star is going to come on the market? And then you go after that star, not indiscriminately, but when you're the Thunder and you have this much talent, and I think what's most intriguing is their best package. You do have to give up value to get value, but their best package for, or most realistic package for a star is not going to have to include Shea or Chet Holmgren or, you know, their most valuable first round picks because they have so many first round picks. And so you get to a point where like you could keep, I would argue, a lion's share, if not this entire core in place. Like you could even say Josh Giddey's untouchable, even though we're trading for another guard. And you're still going to have like maybe one of the two most competitive offers for whatever star you're going after. Mm-hmm. That would be your path to contention next season, is using some of that cap space. And maybe it's like a tandem thing where it's, oh, Miles Turner's coming because you know that the Thunder are going to trade for star X or whatever. But that's how I think you would have to go about making this like monster 1 year leap. But what I think makes it, I don't want to say possible, but if the Thunder really wanted to, is because there aren't a lot of teams that can, you know, make so many different impact players and prospect off limits and then still turn around and field like this colossal offer for a star. The Thunder still can.
I got a trade I want to throw at you. Obviously I'm not going to like compose a trade just in terms of a target. And what do you think about the fit on the team and if it would be possible? What if the Clippers are just like, you know what, this isn't working out, man. You know, these guys can't stay healthy. Kawhi is not getting healthy, and we got to hit the reset button. Give us our stuff back. We'll give you Paul George.
I probably wouldn't do it just because of all the injuries that Paul George has been dealing with over the years. But yeah, he's a really good fit. That's who you want next to Shea, is like the 1B type who's used to playing off someone else and wouldn't necessarily thrive as the number one creator. And so, like, yeah, I mean, he'd be perfect. But if I'm them, I'm pretty, like, I embrace risk. I think too many teams in the league are risk averse. Mm-hmm. I want someone who's like not in the middle of their 30s. If it's Kevin Durant, like, okay, fine. Like, that would just be, one, it'd be hysterical, but two, it's Kevin Durant. But like, when it's sort of that tier below, like, I want someone who's closer to sort of on the same timeline. Mm-hmm. It's just those players don't tend to become available. But like, we just kind of saw it happen with Donovan Mitchell in Utah. And so, like, I'm keeping like my ears to the ground for that. Or even someone like in the 27, 28, or like a Pascal Siakam, like, that's someone who would be a great fit alongside Chet. And he's not going to cost you nearly as much as a Damian Lillard if he comes on the market, or a Kevin Durant, that's for sure. So that is the challenge, though. It's like, you don't want to get like, I think Paul George skews too far. Like, all right, now we're really accelerating the timeline here, because how much longer is Paul George going to be Paul George?
I've got to go. I got to go fix enough of Maddie. Continue. I'll be right back.
So, besides the usual suspects of Wimby and Scoot, who would you most like to see the Thunder draft in this next class? And maybe that range that you're looking at isn't quite as high up the board as we thought going into the season. So, like, who should we be looking at?
Yeah, this is like a terrible question now, because I'm only going to know guys who are like close to the top of the draft, and it doesn't seem like the Thunder might be drafting really around there. I think someone like, I don't know, like a Noah Clowney might be sort of interesting for them. There are a lot of, like, I don't know, there are too many, it feels like, not big enough guards in the range that I think they're going to be drafting. Like, if you could end up in a, you know, are they going to be in Amen Thompson range? That would be a great fit, I think, for the Thunder. But I think most mocks have him going in the top seven. Chris Murray, I think I've actually seen him mock to the Thunder in certain ones. So that could be someone that maybe I would see them taking a roll of dice
Very
on.
Very interesting.
Their range is just so turbulent right now. I mean, I guess you could say that about so many teams because of how jumbled the standings are. But it's funny just because, like, I was initially thinking of top end targets for the Thunder in the draft. When I saw the Chet Holmgren injury, I was like, oh, like, let's like look at these top five prospects. Like, that's who the Thunder are going to zero in on. And they're just not in that range.
And that's been really tough, because we've been living and dying by tankathon.com and running all of those simulations and stuff. And it's just, you know, depending on which side of the rebuild you're on, it's become really difficult to hit that simulate button now, with how good the Thunder have gotten. So we're really not very familiar. Like, a guy like Cam Whitmore, he seemed like was a little higher up early in the year. Tankathon has him at 9. So like, a lot of these guys too, they're very volatile in where it seems like they're going to fall.
Yeah, I think I know a little bit about Cam Whitmore, and I actually thought that he was going to fall lower than 7. So that might like be a name that they could really zero in on there. But look, maybe you just need the Clippers to just, you know, get continuously worse, and then you don't have to worry about scoping out guys in the back end of the lottery.
That's the dream, man. Like, I mean, if the Thunder could make the play-in spot and the Clippers just, like, not bottom out, but, you know, get to like the 12 in the Western Conference, and so like our pick is in like the 8 to 9 range, like, it would just be, it's just chef's kiss. But I'll see you. So, I mean, I guess y'all talked to draft. Yeah, sorry about that, man. My son, his alarm was going off, so had to take care of that. But yeah, man, I think that about covers it. You know, we kept you about an hour, so I don't want to take up any more of your time. Definitely appreciate you coming on. Like, had a blast talking to you, talking shop, and you know, can't wait to see you continuously gassing up the OKC Thunder on your Twitter. So, Dan, I'll go ahead and let you plug anything you want to plug. You know, your writing, your Twitter, your podcast, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, one, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a blast chatting with you. And anyone who wants to follow my work, my name on Twitter, @ Dan Favale, Favale. I'll have all my Bleacher Report and podcast stuff out there. And if you're interested in listening about the NBA league as a whole, check out Hardwood Knox at Hardwood Knox, spelled exactly as it sounds, wherever you get your podcasts, on YouTube, all that good stuff.
Yes, sir. And then, you know, leave a 5-star review for the man, because, you know, Knicks fans are kind of self-sabotaging this podcast. So we got to fix that.
Hawks fans now, people are big mad about the Trae Young takes, apparently.
Yeah. Haters everywhere, man. Haters everywhere. But yeah, definitely appreciate you coming on, Dan. And hopefully, you know, we can have you on in the future, you know, talk about some continued Thunder success.
Most definitely. Thank you guys so much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, boys. I almost forgot the sign off. As always,
Thunder up. Thunder up.
Thank you for listening to the Topic Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder.
Thunder up!
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.